Pray, help us to understand your words. Lord, I thank you that we do have a book that's open, and I do pray that our hearts and our eyes are opened to this book. And thank you for that. There's so many in spiritual darkness. And Lord, I just thank you that you gave me some light, so at least I might see you and a little bit more and about your perfect words. In Jesus' name, amen. Okay, this sermon by Solomon. The theme of it is the vanity of life under the sun. And he keeps going over and over and over on that idea. Okay, the vanity of life under the sun. He's trying to bring us to the conclusion that we better live our lives with our mindset above the sun. Where Paul said it in Colossians 3, set your affection on things above, not on things on the earth. So, let's see, you four girls in that back row, I might have to move you over in the corner by Sarah. You're just goofing. No, don't do that? Okay. We have a bigger corner over here. Okay, he's trying to get us to recognize that we ought to set our affection on things above. We're at chapter 6, verse 3. I do believe where it's at. It says, if a man beget 100 children and live many years, so that the days of his years be many, and his soul be not filled with good. Okay, under the Old Testament covenant, the good will of God or the things of God. Okay, sometimes something may be good, but it's not godly. And his soul not be filled with good. The preceding verses show that the man that has this wealth is not feeding his soul. That's the context. And also that he hath no burial. Okay, now, this guy must be a pretty bad cat. Got 100 kids, and not one's going to his funeral. He said, this guy's so worthless, we're not even going to give him a funeral. So this guy's a pretty self-centered individual. And his kids won't even, you know, come to his funeral. And then he says, I say that an untimely birth is better than he. Now, an untimely birth, a person tends to think, okay, that's just a birth out of time, but the cross-reference on that seems to imply that that's a stillborn. Psalm 58, verse 8. As a snail which melteth, let every one of them pass away like the untimely birth of a woman that may not see the sun or a preemie of some type. Okay, so in verse 3, he's saying, this, it is better off not to be born than for a guy to live a long life, you know, eat, drink, and be merry, and have 100 kids, and the kids won't even go to his funeral, they won't even give him a funeral. He said, man, it's better not even been born. Verse 4, for he cometh in with vanity, this guy, and departeth in darkness. And his name shall be covered with darkness. Moreover, he hath not seen the sun, nor known anything. This hath more rest than the other. I mean, here's a guy that God gave him air, God gave mercy to him, and he did nothing for God. All he's done is lived his life for himself. And he's lived his life so much for himself that when he died, his kids didn't even want to, you know, say goodbye. Good riddance. Get out of here. Okay, and that's a pretty sad thing, but the sad thing is a lot of people like that. Verse 6, he said, yea, though he live 1,000 years, twice told, yet hath he seen no good. Do not all go to one place? With the idea of under the sun, do not all go to one place, he's referring to the ground, the dirt, death. He's not referring to the afterlife. And then verse 7, all labor of man is for his mouth, and yet the appetite is not filled. There's the root cause, or the root motive, the basic motive for working. It's so we can eat. Now, when you get some of these athletes and they're dealing with millions and millions of dollars, okay, and these guys spend it just as quick as they get it, amazingly, but they do that so they can eat. Now, some of the ones at the clear, at the top, the insiders and company, they don't need money. We're dealing with billions of dollars. They don't need money. They use money as a form of control. Their motive is not money per se. And the same goes with the flesh and blood people who are like the movers and shakers of the world. The flesh and blood people, they want the money, make their life more convenient. They think it gives them happiness. Okay, and they may throw in control in there the more demon-possessed they get. But the weird beings, the non-human beings or the cross beings, they have no need for money. Their whole purpose is control. That's the whole mindset, is absolute control. What do they need money for? Okay, and it's like the government, big thing now is they're talking about lower taxes, and Obama, he's so concerned about the deficit, and lower taxes. Does anybody ever tell anybody about the Comprehensive Financial Annual Report, the CAFR? And what's that? That's another bank account, that's another bookkeeping that municipalities and states have. Years ago, we had a governor named O'Bannon, and he said that we were in the hole in Indiana, and we had to raise taxes. He didn't tell anybody at that time the Comprehensive Financial Annual Report had $30 billion in it. Wisconsin had 70 in it a while back. Gene Zimmerman checked on that. Had 70 billion, and that whole state can run on the interest of that bookkeeping. Well, why do they keep charging taxes? Control. Control purposes. That's the whole mode of it. Taxation is not to simply supply the needs of people. And really, it's not even to buy the votes of the people. When they got the electronic voting booth, hey, that money just shipped to the ones who control the electronic voting booth. And whoever pays the most gets the 51% or the 42%. And the other one gets a 48% or 43 and 50, 47. It's the same number of votes, but they always shift the thing around. Okay? And it's just comical. It doesn't matter if they're on the Democrat side or Republican side, the monetary policy is the same, the taxation policy is the same, the mentality of it's the same, the foreign policy is the same, no difference. Nothing talked about the morality of taking something that doesn't belong to them. Nothing's talked about that. Martial law. What if they pass a law that can kill you? People say, well, they wouldn't pass a law like that. They already have. It's called abortion. You see? And they're working on euthanasia. And so, it's just too bad they can't start with the politicians, abort them or put them in euthanasia. Okay, but that's how it goes. Okay, so all labor of man is for his mouth. That's a basic thing of life. In 2 Thessalonians chapter 3, the New Testament verse, if a man is not willing to work, neither should he eat. It's interesting that a short version of that, verse, is found in the Soviet Union's constitution. A place that they don't want the Bible. Okay, verse 8, for what hath the wise more than the fool? What hath the poor that knoweth to walk before the living? Better is the sight of eyes than the wandering of the desire. This is also vanity and vexation of spirit. Okay, better is the sight of eyes than the wandering of desire. Wandering of desire is somebody that has no purpose in life. They just wander through life with no drive, no motivation, no purpose at all. And so it's better to have your eyes set on something. That's better. This generation, young people, they got really no drive, no purpose. What do you plan to do with your life? Ooh, I don't know. Well, work at McDonald's. Maybe Taco Bell. I mean, they just got nothing. And the thing is, get some drive. Get a goal and do something. Build something. Do something as far as constructive with one's life. Okay, at least do that under the sun. And then when you do those things in fellowship with Jesus Christ, then those acts become eternal. If those acts are done without the fellowship of Jesus Christ, then it's a temporal act, and it's going to just die like under the sun, like anything else dies. And so no matter what task you do, whatever vocation God leads you into, when you fulfill that vocation in fellowship with Jesus Christ, then that vocation gets purpose. It has some purpose. It has some value to it. But if it is simply just to put food in your belly or to think you're getting a big bank account or having a nice car or a house or whatnot, and that's the drive, that's the motivation, then when you're dead and gone, what difference does it make? What difference does it make, with this bird, you got a big bird nest? Nothing. I got a cousin that's down in Kentucky that's been trying to get into some type of a ministry for a long time, and he's got nobody to really help him out. He gives me a call every once in a while. He calls me dad every once in a while. And he's now kind of being the pastor of a little church like in a rest home or a old folks community at 20, 25, or 30, I don't know, show up. And he's seen four of them get saved in last week. And he said, everything I've ever done in my life has had no value at all except for those four. And that's true, because you're dealing with something eternal. Okay, and so he says, better is the sight of the eyes than the wandering of desire. Verse 10, that which hath been is named already, that it is known, that it is man, neither may he contend with him that is mightier than he. Okay, contending with one's maker. Folks think they can do it, and they try it, live their life doing it, and they're going to suffer the defeat. 11, seeing there be many things that increase vanity, what is man the better? Okay, there are many things that increase vanity. I mean, with the technology today, all sorts of stuff to build people up. Vain, vain, vain. I mean, it was a college kid that developed the idea of Facebook. The kid's a multimillionaire now. What good has it done him? If he doesn't know Jesus Christ, it's done him no good. You see, what good has the lottery done? Like in Chicago, they passed this big gambling thing up there. They can't run a trash business up there without corruption, let alone gambling. Okay, they got a beloved governor over there to pass this civil union thing. Now they're going to work on getting the queers married. What a state. Okay, and so what is he bet? What is man the better? Verse 12, for who knoweth what is good for man in this life? Who knoweth what is good for man in this life? Well, obviously God does. All the days of his vain life which he spendeth as a shadow, for who can tell a man what shall be after him under the sun? When I read that question in verse 12, for who knoweth what is good for man in this life? I think of the required reading that the public education tries to cram down these kids' throats. Who came up with the idea? Get him algebra, geometry, algebra 2, all this stuff. I can remember in Colorado when I was teaching algebra and algebra 1, the kids would ask me, what good is this going to do me? I said, maybe you'd be an algebra teacher. Shut up. something like that. But, geography, fine, that's some good stuff. Social studies, what good is that? Social studies. History, that's of value. Social studies is studying the social life of people. Oh, so we can put aside our differences? Who decided the curriculum of the schools? Somebody that think they knew everything. It ought to be up to the parents. You see, all education, actually, the only true education is self-education. You can put a kid behind a desk and make him sit there 180 days in a school year from 8:15 to 3 o'clock or wherever the time period is, and how many kids walk out of the public school and still can't read? But he sat in that desk enough qualified time for the state says that he's educated, and he still can't read. You see? Who decides that? Some knucklehead. Somebody that thinks they're a god. It should be the parents. All education should be put in a free enterprise. Adolf Hitler was for public education. And I'm not saying you shouldn't have your kids in public school, but just recognize that you better get involved in it. And you see, this is the whole idea behind the college and consolidation of the schools, is that the more you cram kids into one school, the smaller the parents' influence becomes. And so the only way you get something accomplished, you've got to make a royal fit about things. But who are these people when your kid walks in that school and they have lockdown in that school? Won't let my kid out over my dead body. I know a guy one time that a guidance counselor said to him, when your kid walks in this school building, he is our children, he's not yours. That guy jumped over the desk. I don't think that guidance counselor ever said that again. He said that to the wrong person. He said, that is my child. But you see, they're influenced by that. All education should be put in a private enterprise, and the parents are the ones that delegate what's being taught. This is what I want my child to know, and if they want to know anything else, they'll do it on their time. I, as a parent, this is my right. And this is what I want my child to learn. And these are the time periods I want him to learn it. Raised on a farm, I don't want him sitting in a desk in May. And I don't want him sitting behind a desk in October. The kid better get his butt out there and work in the field with us. Hard work. That's what they need to be taught. Okay? And so, but you see the way things are nowadays, somebody at the top tells us what we're supposed to know. Who is that? Somebody that thinks they're God. I rebel against that. I hate the whole idea of it. For who knoweth what is good for a man in this life? All the days of his vain life which he spendeth as a shadow, short time span. Now when he throws in that idea of the shadow, life is like a shadow, it reminds us of James 4 where it says life is like a vapor. Now James 4, life is like a vapor because in the tribulation time period, man, it is short. Okay, and that's the context, that's the underlying context of this question, aiming at the tribulation time period. For who can tell a man what shall be after him under the sun? Well, the Bible can tell, God can tell. Okay, chapter 7, verse 1, a good name is better than precious ointment, and the day of death than the day of one's birth. Okay, a good name. A person's reputation is what develops their name. And their name will be known in due time. Okay, maybe somebody's got a dad that's really known in accounting for being lazy. And when they hear your name and that's your dad, then they say, well, you must be lazy too because he is. No, no, you just watch me. Your name will get out, and people recognize your character by your name, your reputation. Now, it may hinder you in some cases if somebody's got a bad name and you got the same name. It may hinder you with some people, but those type of people are not people that think. They allow a name to throw them off, preconceived ideas. And the thing is your name and your character will get out. People will know. And what you want them to know, that you're honest, you're sincere, you love God, you're above board, you call a spade, you're straight up. That's what you want them to know about you. A little bit of a Bible nut, kind of goofy on that book. He's a nut, but at least he pays his bills on time. and he works hard. And he'll look you in the eye and he'll treat you with dignity and respect. Now, if you lie to him, you don't much appreciate that, and he'll tell you. Okay, and just want you to be honest about things. The name will get out. Now, in some cases, I know of a guy who went to an area, and the Baptist name was stinky in the area, so he refused to name, put Baptist on his church door. And I don't have a problem with that, you know, if that's what his choice was. But the name and the character of the church will get out anyway. Even if he did put Baptist on the door, I'm not saying he should or shouldn't. A lot of times people will say, what's that church like? You know, the Methodists, what are they like? And you really, to be honest with you, you really can't say, because every church is unique of its own. Even the Catholic churches. They claim to say that all the Catholic churches believe the same. No, they don't. Okay, it's usually following the character, the personality of whoever's behind the pulpit. Okay, now granted, they'll agree the vast majority of the time, but I would dare say that if someone goes into a church and tries to label it, if your church is balanced, if it's biblical, they would have a hard time labeling you. What kind of church is this? Well, they're always talking about tongues. Well, you know who that crowd is. Well, they're always trying to talk about building baptisms and budgets. You can go up to Hammond, you get that. You know? I mean, you pretty much can tell. Well, he might preach on this. Well, he might preach on this. Well, he might go here. Well, he can talk on this. Well, he might go there, wherever God leads him. And that's the way it should be. Trying to have a balance in there. Now, obviously, you can't stay on balance all the time. You're going to get out of balance. Okay, but a good name is better than precious ointment and the day of death and the day of one's birth. That's, you know, obviously that's odd in our thinking. We celebrate birthdays, but not death days. Obviously, how do you celebrate a death day? You can't bring them back. But the idea here is like the end of the race is more important than the beginning. It's not how you start, it's how you end. It's the end of the ball game where you're excited about if you win. Okay, the day of death is better than the day of one's birth. Verse 2, it is better to go to the house of mourning than to go to the house of feasting, for that is the end of all men, and the living will lay it to his heart. Okay, to go to the house of mourning where someone's weeping, someone's crying, possibly about the death of someone. That's when people think about God. They think about eternity. When they think about feasting, when they think about fun, they're not thinking about God at that time. And so that's the time when you need to deal with people. To me, it's always a tragic shame at a funeral when the gospel is not mentioned. Or, what's worse than that, is when this guy you knew lived like a heathen, died and went to hell like any heathen, and the guy behind the pulpit or the gal behind the pulpit says, oh, he was a fine man. You know, and oh, he's in the presence of Jesus. How do you know that? To me, that's worse. Because that's telling everybody you can live like this heathen and still go to heaven when you die. Without mentioning the gospel of Jesus Christ. And the thing is, that during funeral time, that's the time to mention the gospel of Jesus Christ. Whether the person in a casket are saved or lost, it doesn't matter. That's the time to mention it. Now, I don't think, you know, I wouldn't be one, maybe the prophets would, but saying, hey, so-and-so's frying right now, and he would tell you if he came back, you know, he'd tell you you ought to pay attention to the gospel of Jesus Christ. I don't think I'd say that, but still, you can just ignore that fact. And get those folks considering the Lord Jesus Christ. He says, for that is the end of all men, and the living will lay it to his heart. Think about it. They're more sober, the thinking about these things. Verse 3, sorrow is better than laughter. For by the sadness of the countenance, the heart is made better. You're going through difficult times, you're going through tough times. It's those that trouble in life is what makes you consider God more. And that trouble in life makes you recognize that people are going through a tough time. Life is full of trouble. A lot of people try to hide it, try to cover it up. A lot of people crying at nighttime, brokenhearted, heavy-hearted. And you see, and that's where the heart gets stronger, the heart gets better, because you are more considerate, you are more thoughtful of folks when they're going through difficult time. You're more capable to minister to their needs. A lot of coaches would tell you that you learn more when you lose a game than when you win a game. And that's true. Why? You found out you weren't as good as you thought you were. You discovered your mistakes that you made. Where in winning, the ones who are really climbing to the top, even when they win, in their mindset they lost, because they still figure out the mistakes they made. Even though they may have won the game, in their mind they're saying, it could have been better. I could have played better. So sorrow is better than laughter, for by the sadness of the countenance the heart is made better. The heart of the wise is in the house of mourning, but the heart of fools is in the house of mirth. It is better to hear the rebuke of the wise than for men to hear the song of fools. Now, the song of fools, you can turn on the radio and run down the dial, and almost any of the stations, song of fools. It doesn't matter what brand you call it. You're dealing with a song of fools. And when you're dealing with music, you're dealing with the spirit. And when you get into the music of fools, which is 99% of the music on the radio, including the Christian stations, when you deal with the music of the fools, your spirit is uniting with their spirit. And if their spirit is a satanic spirit, your spirit's uniting with that. You're paying money to promote someone's satanic faith. Why don't you just join the crowd? You see, you're promoting it. You're promoting the devil's crowd. You're paying to support them. You're paying to support perverts, the song of fools. Music is such a powerful thing. A person may not know what's right, but you can tell what's wrong. You know, we got this new station around here, 90.5. You know, Hal Anderson's pushing the thing out, and they got some decent stuff on there, but they got some pretty raunchy music on there too. They got fleshly music on that station. They have some good music. But they've got fleshly music too. And a person needs to keep these things in mind. Now, I notice a lot of times us men, we'll be driving down the road or something, we'll be playing it, and we'll be in our nothing box, and we won't hear a cotton-picking thing. Okay, but still at that, the song of fools, recognize the power of music. Satan, remember, was the anointed cherub. And the anointed cherub knows how to use music to move people, to pull them, to draw them away from Jesus Christ. It is better to hear the rebuke of the wise. It's better to get chewed out by somebody who's wise than for a man to hear the song of fools. For as the crackling of thorns under a pot, so is the laughter of the fool. This is also vanity. Laughter of the fool. That's most of the sitcoms, if not all of them. Verse 7, surely oppression maketh a wise man mad, and a gift destroyeth the heart. Okay, in this context, a gift is a bribe, destroyeth the heart. Oppression maketh a wise man mad. Okay, is that crazy? Or is that making him angry? It seems like in the context it's dealing with anger, where you see the oppression, and if the context is in a court setting because it's a gift that destroys a heart, or a political adventure because of bribe, and the political figure's oppressing someone, that makes a wise man mad. He gets upset about it. Why? Because of the injustice. Job saw these things, and Job would say that I'd search things out and I'd help to try to help out the innocent. I mean, his attorney is just an amazing thing. The corruptness, I haven't met a good one. I've met one good one that I can recall through the years. And he was more of a financial consultant. But these some of the most crooked people in any county is usually a defense attorney. You know, the ones that they give to these people that can't afford them. These attorneys, they know what they're supposed to do in court, but for somehow they just can't remember it until the money comes in. And they don't like to have trials. They don't like to have to study. They're all negotiators. Psychology? Oh, psychology? These guys are master psychologists. And I've heard many a people talk about hiring an attorney, and the argument, the complaint is almost always the same. I can't get them to do anything. Why? It's because they hold an allegiance higher than their client. And their allegiance is to the court. And if they have to hang their client for the sake of the court, they'll do it every time. You see? And that ought to bother people. See, I have a little one-page handout about attorneys. It says, beware of attorneys. And I've got about five cases where it shows that an attorney has dual obligations. One is to the court, one is to the client. And these are court sightings. These are what courts have said. And they have said that if his duty to the client and the court conflicts, he must yield to the court. And then I put a couple Bible verses in there about what Jesus said. And it's a person is really in a catch-22 if you have to go that route. Verse 8, better is the end of a thing than the beginning thereof, and the patient in spirit is better than the proud in spirit. Okay, better the end, that's like the death thing at the beginning, death and birth. And patient is in spirit is better than proud in spirit. Patient with the Lord. Patient with others. Okay, patience is another synonymous word with long-suffering. Long-suffering is one of the fruits of the Spirit. Being patient with people. Being patient with ourselves. Being patient with the Lord, probably more than anything. When it says you consider the patience of Job, the patience with Job was he was patient with his friends, he was patient with his wife, he was patient with time, he was patient with God. That's better, to be patient in spirit than the proud in spirit. Proud in spirit is connected with being hasty. Verse 9, be not hasty in thy spirit to be angry, for anger resteth in the bosom of fools. I'm sure all of us can think back at a time when we got mad, upset about something, and when the truth be made known, then we got embarrassed for our reaction. Wait for all the facts to get in. He that answereth a matter before you heareth it is folly and shame unto him. Wait things out, and then react appropriately. Okay, we'll stop there at verse 9. Any questions or comments? Are we covered? Okay, prayer requests.